Patterns, ladies and gentlemen, patterns. We are starting to see them. Welcome to All Talk, All USL, Talk USL, covering the latest scores, news, and developments. The second highest division of the United States men's professional soccer system. That's right, the USL Championship. I'm your host, as always, Vince Galvano. Plenty to get into in what is episode 5 and match day 3. Man, oh man, we are rolling right now at the moment in the USL Championship. So much fun things to talk about. I said in the beginning of the show, patterns, they're starting to emerge with teams, with conferences, with players. We'll get into a couple, especially with the teams having a look at the table towards the end of the show. But I'm going to cover first our match day spotlight, going with another Eastern Conference clash, Hartford Athletic taking on Birmingham Legion. And then we'll then get into the rest of the match day. Three fixtures, what was, as always, an eventful Saturday that took place on March 23rd. Prior to getting into it, just one last thing, by the way. Goal of the week for match day 2 went to, well, it was the game we covered last week, Loudoun United versus North Carolina, Khalil El-Medkar. His diving header, which was the opening goal for Loudoun in that game, won match day 2's goal of the week. And rightfully so. I gave Kwame Awuah the man of the match in last week, and his pinpoint cross from the left to open the scoring for El-Medkar. Get that full stretch, brilliant diving header at Segre Field. Definitely made it the reason for getting that goal of the week for game week 2, match day 2. All right, let's get into it then. Spotlight, Hartford Athletic taking on Birmingham Legion. Ooh, this was a good one, but also a very rainy day. Rainy, misty, cloudy, showery, unpleasant weather, we could say. It was 52 degrees at Trinity Health Stadium, the stadium located right outside of the Capital Area, exit 29A, close to Interstate 91. Unpleasant weather situation, but hey, that didn't stop these Hartford Athletic fans from turning out. I mean, there was a scattered attendance, pockets of people, you know, staying together in the warm with their umbrellas. So right underneath 3,000 people, but they showed up to the stadium, and it was interesting because the stadium had two main stands of bleachers, right? Pretty big bleachers. So you can see these people in their raincoats and umbrellas, but then behind the goals, there's no stands. And instead, what they have were just these blue tents lined up, and you just saw pockets of people trying to stay warm underneath, but also, you know, having fun digesting the action from there. But I'm sure they were also having some cold ones to stay warm on what was a rainy day. And on the opposite side of the skybox, you had cars zooming off the Interstate 91 Parkway. I mean, talking about an American atmosphere, I said in the first game when we covered New Mexico, taking on Pittsburgh, you know, that was taking place at a baseball field. Here, you just have an interstate next to the stadium, so you had cars just zooming by as the game was going on. You love it. You just love to see it. Gives it some nice ambiance, gives it some nice atmosphere, especially if you want to clear one out towards the Parkway. Why not, right? Let's preview both of these teams, shall we, as well as taking a look at what USLChampionship.com had to say about some of the key players to watch out for. Well, starting first with Hartford, we should say the big one, Romario Williams from Jamaica. Not playing in this one since he was on international duty, but nonetheless a very, very important player for Hartford and will be a fundamental part of their attack this season. I won't go too much on what they have to say about him since he wasn't playing this game. But in any case, he's had 56 goals in 120 appearances across the championship's regular season and playoffs. So he's scored dozens and dozens of goals while playing in the USL Championship. So really a solid player, and I'm going to be looking forward to seeing how he performs throughout this season, especially that he's got some good service with Beckford by him, right, with Epps, with the 2022 Championship Young Player of the Year, Michel Angelina flanking him. So he's got, you know, a really good solid foundation for a striker for Hartford to then even get more goals as he continues his season. But unfortunately, playing with Jamaica, not available for this one. I'll touch upon a little bit about Michel Ngalia, who's from Congo, the midfielder, who's a 2022 Championship Young Player of the Year. Prior to the USL, he played at Göztepe, which is a second division Turkish side, had 22 appearances in the Turkish second division, 15 league games with 3 goals. So cool to see that sometimes these players, they played in other parts of the world, i.e. Europe, South America, and so forth. But cool to see that. I had my eyes, especially on him. We'll touch upon his performance as we go along. The other player that was kind of shouted out for a defender player to watch from USLChampionship.com, the player from French Guiana, who he was born in France, this is Thomas Vankaizila. They had this to say about the All-League selections in 2019 and 2020. Player that formerly played with Pittsburgh when he got those All-League selections. They had this from USLChampionship.com. It wasn't too long ago that Thomas Vankaizila was one of the most versatile and respected defensive players in the USL Championship. So racking up those All-League selections, 2019 and 2020. Since then, however, things hadn't gone right for the French Guiana international. Stints with San Diego Loyal Soccer Club, Birmingham Legion FC as well, and the Tampa Bay Rowdies didn't work out as intended. And this past season, the 29-year-old was out of the league entirely. But now he's back, joining Hartford Athletic as it looks for a major turnaround in fortune under new head coach Brendan Burke. And if Vankaizila can capture his Pittsburgh form, he could be a major part of delivering a successful season. As such, we'll be watching quite closely. That was from USLChampionship.com. So those were some of the players that had been mentioned for Hartford. On the backside of things, taking a look at Birmingham, I'll talk about two. Obviously, the big one, Enzo Martinez, the Uruguayan midfielder player to watch. Big traits, you know, big leader, usually the most valuable player when playing in terms of these games. Once Birmingham are successful, USL Championship had mentioned this about Martinez from Uruguay, saying that the bristling beard is a fiery personality. Start not to be drawn to watching Enzo Martinez. The fact that he's still one of the most influential midfielders in the championship only serves to make that experience all the better. And at 33 years old, he's showing no signs of slowing down yet. So he's a long-standing USL Championship player. Martinez has arguably been the most important player in Birmingham Legion FC's success over the past two seasons. He's notched 25 goals and 15 assists across his regular season and playoffs, while logging more than 6,000 minutes of action. As Birmingham looks for consistency this season, as a leader in the middle of the park, it can count on. Martinez also played in the MLS back in 2018 for Colorado Rapids, registering 22 appearances in that process. The other player was Fanuel Kavita from Congo, a player to watch for as a defender. He also had experience in the MLS, not as much as Enzo Martinez, but he played with Real Salt Lake for 3 games back in the 2015-2016 season. Kavita, this is what USL Championship had to say about him. There was plenty to enjoy in Birmingham Legions FC's 2023 campaign, led by the club's run to the quarterfinals of the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup and spot in the Eastern Conference semifinals of the playoffs. But there were times when his defensive frailties proved too much for an enterprising attack to overcome. There's plenty of reason to go around for that, but as experienced as Fanuel Kavita, and is his performance levels dipped notably from their 2022 levels. The 30-year-old posted a plus 1.51 goals added above replacement mark in 2023, his lowest actually of the past 4 full seasons, while winning only 15 tackles at 53.6% success rate, recording only 21 interceptions and about 27,500 minutes of action. There's improvement needed in the Birmingham back line overall, but given his position on the team, Kavita's campaign will be one to watch closely. So, next time you're watching Birmingham, Hartford, you come across, these are some of the players that USLChampionship.com had the liberty of pointing out in their season preview. So getting back to this one, going into the game, Hartford lined up with a 4-2-3-1, Birmingham with a 3-4-3. Birmingham's defensive shape for the first half, 5-back line, 5-4-1. For Hartford, it was really a 4-2-3-1. Pretty much all throughout the game. There was on the call for this one, Joe D'Ambrosio and Mark Donaldson from ESPN on color. Makes sense. Mark Donaldson, I watch him from his play-by-play on the Serie A games recently as well, and makes sense that he's covering Hartford Athletic because ESPN, the offices are right there in Connecticut. So pretty cool to hear him on the call for a USL championship game. The first half, the surfaces were slippery. But it wasn't too long until we got the first really golden opportunity of the game. And it was only 2 minutes in when Hartford was able to slip through on the right. And the keeper, who's on loan from FC Cincinnati for Birmingham, he made a save off the shot from Beckford. And it just went underneath him. And then Beckford kind of got it again. And then just got cleared from a Birmingham defender. This was already 2 minutes into the game. So, I mean, the slippery surfaces were already in a play with players slipping over it. But the ball somehow making its way past the left side and onto the right winger for Hartford Athletic. Third minute, right after, Angelina played a nice one-on-one and played a low ball in, but we got blocked out. Right from the get-go, Hartford really reactive, especially after losing possession. It was almost like a press after possession loss. Hartford were playing long balls to start the game up, especially just trying to chip balls behind, get their wingers involved. And as soon as you know something didn't go right or they had lost it on a 50-50, boom, they were right there pressing, trying to get the ball back at a very, very high up the field, pinpointing those Birmingham Legion defenders in their own area. And in the eighth minute, there was a very nice play from Jay Chapman, who was quite impressed with the midfielder for Hartford in his own half. The ball was at the corner, deep inside Hartford's half, close to the stands on the near side, and he just managed to wiggle out of it. It didn't seem like the surfaces or the rain was affecting him and his ability to play very simple, right? To play very nice soccer, keep the ball on the ground, but also be able to play the long ball. Looked very comfortable, even regardless of the conditions. And the first corner came in that time period as well from that towards the 10th minute. But, you know, 10 minutes in, it was all Hartford to start this game off. Not really much going for Birmingham. And I really liked Hartford because they had this patient buildup side to side in the middle of the back and then trying to play long on the wings, you know, chipping balls or through swingers on the outside, which is not really ideal if you think about it on a slippery surface. But with the speedy wingers that Hartford has, they seem adept to handling, you know, not the most clean balls to them, but if it's a 50-50, somehow trying to get there or coming onto it or putting pressure just from their speed onto Birmingham to make a mistake and try to get the ball from there. But Birmingham, it wasn't shortly after the 10-minute mark where they started to get a little bit going forward. The forward Preston got in a nice pocket of space, received it in between the lines, and was able to turn no problem, and took his space with that Hartford game to him, and then letting him turn with ease in the process. One player who was also not only, he wasn't stagnant at all, but he was all over the place. It was Esedu playing against his former club, the midfielder, who scored in the fixture against Hartford for Birmingham last season. He had a nice one-on-one left side, but then the shot went wide for the 13th minute. Crazy to see Esedu playing against his former club, Birmingham Legion. Because, I mean, he was one of the only few remaining players from Birmingham's original 2019 roster to still be on the team last year in 2023. Over those five seasons, I mean, he's logging over 9,000 minutes of play as a box-to-box midfielder, 112 appearances, 160 tackles, 632 duels, swiped 136 interceptions, 3 goals and 9 assists over the course of that season. That was the stats that Hartford really were announcing of him when he signed for the club. So to see him playing against his former club this time around, the fact that he scored against Hartford in the fixture last season, 13 minutes in, already getting involved in the final third, and a big player to watch as the game continued to progress. In the 15th minute, Hartford Epps was able to get the interception from Birmingham playing out of the back. He played a nice 1-2 with the Senegalese striker, the 20-year-old Geng, making his first ever professional appearance, by the way. This 1-2 lays Epps off, and then Angelina comes into the box. Epps lays Angelina off, and he hits it over the bar, trying to curl it to the right side. A bit of a wasted opportunity here from Angelina. I just think either one of two things. Epps could have maybe taken it himself in the 15th minute when this happened. It was a nice layoff. And then once and Galena had it, it was like he had time, it seemed, but it was almost like too much time. The fact that he tried to curl and just try to get that shot on frame, it was no reason to be missing the frame from that far out. Birmingham really had nothing going for them in these opening 20 minutes. You can see there, I guess they were trying to counter, but Hartford was doing such a great job of just getting the ball and being quick on the counter, or just being quick to try to go forward with it, getting their wingers involved. In the 18th minute, Patterson for Birmingham, like he must have slipped like three times, I noticed, the center back up to this point. So they were struggling with the surface and the conditions. In the 20th minute, Dieng, the Senegalese striker, as I mentioned, the ball was bouncing and he somehow heeled it. Like, he heeled it off the bounce towards Angelina. I don't know if he meant to do that, but it forced the Legion goalkeeper to come off his line, and Angelina pushed it to the side of the goalkeeper, but somehow it went for a goal kick. I love the anticipation in the midfield of Hartford in these opening 20 minutes with the Seydou and Epps, like, doing the work, and then you have Chapman as the playmaker. It's a really nice midfield three. It's a solid combination that they have going for them. A couple minutes later, we get the first goal of the match. It's a Seydou scooping the ball up, and it's not being dealt with by Birmingham. Somehow, Angelina is in between the right back and center back. This ball comes out of nowhere. It just pops up, drops the top of the 18. No one deals with it. No one's able to get ahead on it, nothing, but Angelina's there, and he has a nice reactive left-footed finish. It looked like he was going to shoot it with his right, but suddenly changed his mind on the bounce, and then just slots it home with his left. He catched it so quickly that didn't even give Van Ogel a chance to react. So a really nice goal. He was then flipping in the process. The stadium was going bananas as Hartford took the lead in the opening half an hour. And the 25th minute right after, I mean, Epps almost grabbed a second with a shot deflected out for a corner. And then off the corner kick, Chapman got the clearance back out to him, and then he whipped a delicious ball. I'm talking inch perfect, and it missed about three Hartford players, one trying to dive for it. But really, really nice cross from Chapman there. And they were putting the pressure on at this point. And what I had noticed was the third time a clearance from a corner came back out to Hartford. I don't know what was going on with Birmingham's set-piece defending, but it just, second balls on the outside of the box, if it got cleared out, no chance that a Birmingham player was getting to it. There was a Hartford player right there to either give a nice delivery into the box or find another Hartford player to string the pass and maintain that possession. Also, it was interesting, after the 25 minutes, by the way, the audio came on for the stadium, since it was just the commentators for the first 25 on the YouTube stream that I was watching. But right away, I mean, what you heard was the drums going and the shouts and the screams from the fans. So they were amped up after the goal of Angelina. Half an hour in, another corner kick header near post and saved by the goalkeeper, and then played across the six, but the shot cleared off the line. I'm talking craziness. These corner kicks kept coming in for Hartford at the moment. And then they really played a nice throw-in play right after when the ball got cleared out. Hodges, the left back, takes it. He's pretending like he's going to do a long ball into the box. Everyone's buying it, and all of a sudden Chapman comes short with the player behind him. Chapman just fakes to his left, but then goes to his right towards the byline, and then drives a nice byline cross to his left foot. He's good with both of his feet, too. So, I mean, there's six corners in the opening half an hour for Hartford. And, man, oh, man, Birmingham just from, I don't know if it was just the conditions, right? But needs to work on their set pieces because either clearances or less people on the post to anticipate the first clearance, or some scattered throughout on the outside of the 18 somehow, just to see if they can get the second ball in their favor. And in the 33rd minute, Beckford and Angelina switched sides, and Beckford received the ball, chested it on the left side, and then just knocked it past the outside defender, winning a nice one-on-one battle and then driving a low cross in. It seems like these wingers kind of exchanged themselves a lot for Hartford. And at this point, it was like, how can Hartford not be up by more than one goal? And it's credit to how they played. And I think the reason being for the fact that they were generating so much chances was that they had a lot of space. And that was because of the long balls. They started the first 5-10 minutes right? Just pinging balls over the top, pinging balls over the top, pinging balls over the top. And I think it just kind of kept Birmingham's defense a little bit deep. And that allowed then for the 10th minutes to really start then playing the short passes, the side to side, since they had that more space. They created that space from their opening 10 minutes of how playing those long balls, because usually it is always frenetic. The adrenaline's going in the first couple minutes of a game, right? So, you know, keep that energy high. You don't have a lot of time in the ball, right? So why not just kick it long, kick it long, kick it long? They have the wingers. And then when Birmingham gets in the habit of, oh, we need to drop off because they keep playing long balls, then we can start knocking it around, right? And you could see it. 37th minute, and Birmingham is exhausted. Preston somehow ends up on the right side, the forward for Birmingham. He intercepts it. He intercepts a long ball. He chests it down. The touch gets away from him, right? He then recuperates the ball, but he tries to get it to Hernandez Foster, the other midfielder for Birmingham. And Foster, like, sort of wants it, but then just, like, leaves it for Preston. And then Preston loses out of his duel to Asedu. It's frustrating. It's frustrating when you think you can get the ball. You want to give it to the midfielder. You feel like, hey, I just made the interception. Take it. I need to get back up forward. But no one was taking responsibility. And I think it was just because they were so frustrated. They tweaked it a little bit. Like they got him wide. They got Fernandez a bit more forward. Pashner was moving around on the right side. But, I mean, the adjustments, nothing was coming to fruition for Birmingham. It was like, let's hold on for the remainder of this first half. 41st minute, Chapman does a beautiful dummy. Ball gets played to him, top of the 18, just lets it go through. Asedu gets onto it and is able to drive a shot from outside the box to force a save from Van Okel. Love Jay Chapman's awareness, the midfielder. Number 8 for Hartford was a joy to watch, the Canadian. In the 44th, he had also a very nice free kick with another beautiful ball, kind of similar to the cross that he had beforehand. Legion, they were going short on the goal kicks they were having. And I can tell they have much more success on the left side than on the right. But whenever they had to go on the right side, trouble happened. But when they went on the left, they were still able to play out of it somehow. More so than definitely at the right side of things. And that was really the end of the first half. Get these stats for the end of the first half. 18 shots to 2. Total shots. 18 to 2. In favor of Hartford, 7 corners to 1, and then 32 touches in the opposition box to 7 of Hartford. I'm shocked. I was shocked it was only 1-0 at the end of this first half, and Birmingham needed to make some adjustments in the second to really see if they can give Hartford a run for their money. And the first sub came on for Rufe for Marana. Coming on for Birmingham, and in the 46th minute, there was a great chance for Birmingham in the opening. Nwegbo gets forward and has his chance deflected, but Nwegbo has already pushed forward in the second half, and that was one of the interesting things. So they changed their shape defensively, and went to a 4-4-2, but more so, the wide midfielders who were so pinned back in the first half from all the long balls, they started to now have the license to move forward. They needed to get a goal, right? So they're pushing the wide midfielders forward, and Nwegbo had a great, great second half as a result of that. And having an opening chance of the second half fall to him. In the 40th minute, Hartford, they had a long ball cleared out by a header back to the center. The midfielder goes to head it back towards the defender, and it falls to Dieng, who smacks the ball off the volley. But Van Okel comes out and saves it with the chest. Again, it seemed like Birmingham had no idea how to handle balls in terms of playing high in the sky, because they were just heading it back in the center in this instead of heading it out wide to a throw-in or up the field. So Dieng, the Senegalese 20-year-old, almost got his first goal in his debut game. Stretched out in the second half for both sides. It was end-to-end stuff. Really, I really, if you grab the popcorn if you were neutral for this one. Fun to see how both teams were really going for it. The 51st minute, another big chance came for Hartford as Asedu scooped up the ball again in the midfield, finds Epps. Epps fakes it to his left, and the shot gets saved and deflected again right to Dieng in front of the goal, and the rebound gets saved again from Van Okel. 10 duels won before the hour for Asedu. He was a nuisance. He was like a Thanksgiving turkey gobbling up all the 50-50s. In the midfield. Van Okel coming up big with some nice saves to start the second half to keep Birmingham in it, and Birmingham would get into it shortly after. But the fact that the Asedio was just all over the place, 10 duels being won within the opening hour, goes to show that he's got what it takes to play in that box-to-box role that he has already proved when he had his experience with Birmingham the past couple of seasons. Now playing for Hartford. In the 56th minute, Nwegbo on the left, he got the better of Asedio. The first time that it actually happened all game, he nutmegs him and goes inside nicely. And he looked great going forward. Legion, they have a strong left side. And Nwegbo, the Nigerian, he's a big part of that. I just want to double check if he is Nigerian. Hold on. I don't want to give false information. Yes. So the 22-year-old Nigerian, he would go on to have 4 successful dribbles in the game, all of them coming in the second half. But he nutmegs and gets the better of Asedio there in the 56th minute. He looks confident. He looked like he was trying to take guys on, right? Trying to find a solution. Had the license to now go forward and try things, since it wasn't like anyone else from Birmingham was really doing their part. Right before the hour mark, Legion put their second sub on, Perez for Kasim. In the 60th minute, Asedio, winning all those duels, he got nutmeg just now, and then he actually gets a yellow for a foul disrupting Pasher. So, signs of Legion gaining momentum. It was a deflected shot. Hold on. Signs of Legion gaining momentum there. And they actually had their first, we'd say, maybe big chance of the game, Legion. It was a deflected shot from outside the 18. And the ball went high. It was about to land on the goal line of Hartford. And Walters, the goalkeeper for Hartford, is tested for the first time. And he goes to pick it up, you know, from the air. It just drops the stone and, like, loses it and fumbles it. Right there in front of him, there's a Legion forward trying to get onto it. Somehow just makes its way out for a corner kick. But man, that was a close one. That was the first time Walters got tested really all game. Hartford Athletic would then just make a sub. Epsu come out a couple minutes afterwards. Mankanjila comes on for him. And the 67th minute sub for the Perez that came on for Legion, he gets involved. A nice shot from outside the box that skews to the upright, but Birmingham are generating some offense at this point. 15 minutes into the second half, it's starting to tilt in their favor. And you want to talk about signs. In the 68th minute on the right side, near side, where the coaches were, there was a nice successful tackle. Not a foul, in my opinion, but it was, I think it was, who was it? It was Beckford that had went down. And Patterson had made a nice challenge. Didn't use his shoulders at all, knocked him down. But coach for Birmingham, Brendan Burke, he's going berserk on the sideline. He gets the yellow card for trying to appeal the call on his touchline. So signs of that in terms of, you know, games starting to go in Birmingham's favor as the second half, we're in the middle of it, and Hartford is starting to lose its grip on the game in what was obviously a lot of slippery surfaces. So hard to even maintain your grip as well. So in the 70th minute, Hartford made their second sub. So Beckford had come out, he just lost a duel, right? But Mushagalusa came in, and it was going to be a long 20 for Hartford coming up. And 73rd minute, Legion gets the golden opportunity of the game. And it came off of Hartford's first corner of the second half. When it got cleared out, Hartford tried to settle down and in the middle of their half, of the attacking half. And the ball got stripped by Martinez, and he launched a full-blown 2-on-1 counterattack. He lays off Pasher as the defender starts to approach him, the sole defender. Pasher, he then takes it, puts it on his left, doesn't get the best in terms of, you know, trying to get his balance right, and at this point, the Hartford players are rushing behind Walters. Walters comes off his line, the shot is low and saved by the foot of Walters, with plenty of people also behind him. As well, I think Pasher should have equalized there. I think it was the best chance for Birmingham all game. And 5 minutes later, they would have even, you can argue, let's say a better chance because it hit the post. But 70th minute, Preston, I mentioned he dropped in between the lines in the first half, right? He was able to get the ball turned confidently. This time he gets it in between the lines. Instead, he's like, I'm not going to dribble. I'm going to take a nice shot. And takes a gorgeous shot, smacks the crossbar from 30 yards out. Great form on the shot as well. And he drops into that space really nicely, I noticed. But I personally don't like it when a forward does that. Like, you have to have someone, I think, occupying the center backs to create space. Like, a nice forward just in between the center backs so that they're occupied, maybe frees up space for a second striker or attacking midfielder. But Preston had done it in a very solid way. Like, he did it appropriate with good timing. Both times he dropped in because it was the right thing to do, right? That was the only way he was going to get maybe a touch on the ball and so forth. And be able to touch and turn and then shoot, hit the crossbar from 30 yards out was quite impressive. And man, oh man, two back-to-back chances, none of them finding the back of the net. And Hartford couldn't get out of their half to save their life. Couldn't string passes together either. So it was a bit of a role reversal, to take the words from Donaldson, who was on the color. And in the 84th minute, Hartford, they had a smart play with the winger checking on the left side, and then the midfielder, I think the substitute, Mancangela, takes the space behind and then plays the ball across, but it's blocked by the keeper and out for a corner. And that corner would then go on to generate a nice doubleheader, but parried over the bar. Probably the best chance for Hartford after Birmingham took control of the game in that 70th to 80th minute span. Rest of the game, a lot of subs were coming on for both sides. Dion came off in the 85th minute, the Senegalese 20-year-old. Really, really good job in the absence of Romario Williams. The fact that he was playing his first game, he looked quite good. He was active, and he found himself in good positions, albeit maybe didn't have the best finishing touch to these sort of positions, but the fact that he was getting there is important. So kudos to him and congratulations for making your debut at such a young age, not having all the experience, not the most ideal of surfaces or scenarios with the weather, but still makes the most of it. 88th minute, Nwegbo, again, wins a foul with a half step over, won 4 out of 4 dribbles for the stats of the second half, really, really solid. And the 90th minute, you probably have the last final chance for Birmingham in the game. He had a nice free kick, which he won the foul of, I was pretty sure. Free kick over the wall, and Walter parries it out in front of him, and Perez gets his second shot of the game, but his half volley goes wide. Couldn't get his balance right and get it onto the frame, and that would be the last chance for Birmingham in the game, as well as the last chance for both sides in the game. At this point, it was raining, the wind was going, camera couldn't keep up with the droplets and the smock over the lens, so forth. I think it was time to pull the curtain on this one. Once that whistle was blown, tremendous cheer from the home crowd as well as the home bench. A relief since it was really all Birmingham Legion for the final 30 minutes. The second win of a home opener in Hartford's history. I'm really shocked how this game somehow ended up only 1-0. I thought Hartford could have more than one goal in the first half, and that Birmingham from the really two good opportunities in the second, surprised one of them didn't go in. Notes on Hartford. Hey, man, they looked dangerous in the first half, and I can't believe there was 5 players supposedly missing for them. Obviously, Williams being a big one for Jamaica on international duty, but they did a great job of getting that ball over the back line and getting their speedy wingers involved. Going long to start, then settling down and stringing passes together when Birmingham was dropping deep in anticipation of those long balls. They had some golden chances, but their finishing was off today. Maybe more composure needed in the final third going forward in these next upcoming games so they take their champion, you know, they take their chances when they get them. But Hartford, in the second half, they lost their grip a little bit. They had nice chances early on in the first 15 with Epps and Dieng, but couldn't find the back of the net, and then were holding on for dear life in the last 30 minutes. But injuries aside, and with Williams, this game could have probably had the potential to be closed out in the first. Hartford can play in the rain, and their midfield balance 3 is nice. Hodges, the left back, was solid too, and they press well after losing possession. The wingers are quick. In terms of Birmingham, I mean, we know they struggled in the first half to get any foot into the game. They were lucky to escape only 1-0 down. I mean, when you talk about it, one of the stats from this game was they only won 35% of all aerial duels, and they were slow to react on some of the loose balls, and that was credit to Hartford's speed. I worry about them defending on set pieces this season, if today was any indication. The second half, though, they showed some nice adjustments with 16 shots compared to just 2 in the first half, and to also have those 2 big chances created. Nwegbo was much more affected when given the liberty to push forward the 22-year-old Nigerian as opposed to hanging back in a back five or being more defensive, winning 100% of his dribbles in this match. And on his side, the left side, it looked much more effective building out and attacking, not so much on the right. So opposing teams take notice when you watch Birmingham play. If today's game is of any indication, I'd be interested to see the team play on a nice day or even at their home field. So I'll keep my eyes peeled in the meantime. And Preston did, I think Preston and Nwegbo for me were the two that stood out for Birmingham. On to other games of match day three, starting first with Louisville City 3, Pittsburgh Riverhounds 1. I was able to watch the first 20 minutes of this one, having just watched Hartford on the earlier kickoff. And Louisville Stadium, Lynn Family Stadium, it's gorgeous. It's a nice grass field, by the way. So it's going to make for a really nice CBS showcase on April 6th when they take on a D11, especially if the weather is as nice as it was this past Saturday. From what I saw in the opening 20 minutes, they were all over Pittsburgh, you know, using that home field atmosphere, about 10,000 in attendance to their advantage, and they were not letting their foot off the gas pedal. And then right before the end of the first half, a bouncing ball in the midfield goes back and forth and somehow makes its way to Harris, who slots it past Eric Dick to give Louisville the lead to go into halftime. In the 59th minute in the second half, Kitza gets the first goal of Pittsburgh's season, coming off a nice press from the Riverhounds after Louisville struggled to play short from the goal kick and were exposed and so wide. And once Pittsburgh got it, they played in that nice cross. It was a nice first-time finish. Congrats to Kitza for getting his first goal of the season, as well as Pittsburgh's first goal of the season. But 5 minutes later, things would take a turn for the worse for Pittsburgh fans. And that was Louisville getting a penalty kick, and up steps Sean Totsch and buries it from the spot. Louisville would add another in the dying minutes of the game to make it 3-1 by Serrano. By the way, can we do something, by the way, in terms of, you know, the fact that Serrano scored in the 95th minute? Can we just start blowing the final whistle? I don't understand why there needs to be a kick of the game again for 15 seconds, another kickoff. The game is over. You know, the game is over. Just blow it. It's much more of a relief, especially if you're down. And why would you want to kick off another 15 seconds that are meaningless, especially if the goal deficit is greater than one? If it's one goal deficit, I understand, but come on. Two, just blow the final whistle. It would be nice if people start doing this. Referees from other leagues, as well as USL Championship, do that. For Pittsburgh, it's one goal in three games. But good news, Kaiser Sterling was on the bench, made his debut, coming on as a sub. But they sit bottom of the Eastern Conference for the time being. Louisville, 6 points from two games. Next up is Birmingham Legion. At the same time of Louisville taking on Pittsburgh, we had Detroit City FC taking on Loudoun United. Detroit would win this one 2-1 with two second-half goals. Faroe had a Christmas gift. I said it last week when he had made this mistake against North Carolina FC. Had they capitalized on his mistake, they probably would have went with a point or possibly a win from this one. Detroit, this time around, they took advantage of it, and they got the 3 points as a result. So kudos to them for pressing Faroe and also pressing Loudoun United. It was something that was a warning sign in the earlier game when we covered it in the spotlight match last week. And Detroit now have 2 for 2, just like Louisville. Loudoun, though, with 6 goals in 3 games so far, and a draw, win, and a loss to show for it, but still no win on the road for them in their 2 games that they've played so far on the road. Charleston Battery would take on New Mexico United, and big one here for Battery, winning 4-0 in the process. Charleston Battery ran riot in their 4-0 victory over New Mexico United in the Battery's 2024 home opener at Patriots Point. They set the tone early with their high pressure, which paid dividends throughout the night. Nick Markinich in the 17th minute, Arturo Rodriguez in the 56th minute, Aaron Malloy off a free kick in the 64th minute, and Jackson Conway in the 90th down the back of the net to send Patriots Point into a frenzy, as well as 3 points for Charleston Battery. That was from Charleston Battery staff writers on their official website. So undefeated from three, this being their first win of the season. So like Loudoun, New Mexico is also 1-1-1 on the season after this loss. And this also marks the first game that they were held scoreless. And it is also the first game where they have given up more than one goal. Big question marks in terms of some of the personnel that New Mexico put out. One of them was Tambakis, the Greek goalkeeper, was not starting. So Chris Shakes got his debut, and Shakes comes to the black and yellow following a terrific collegiate career at Pennsylvania State University, where he earned all Big Ten honors as well as 21 career shutouts. Upon his signing, by the way, the United Sporting Director, Itamar Kainen, said that Chris is a terrific young talent, has been truly impressive in their preseason, and is only going to continue to get better. Well, this time around, he let four past him on his debut for New Mexico United, which is quite tough. So we'll see who's in between the pipes for the next one for New Mexico. I venture to say that it would be Tambakis. Maybe they just decided to give Shakes the go-ahead this time around to get his gloves, say, dirty, but to also see what it's like to play in a USL championship. New Mexico finished their three-game road trip to Phoenix next. Talk about strength of schedule for New Mexico United. Probably the worst schedule out of anyone. Yeah, they had the home opener against Pittsburgh, but then they had to play Rhode Island away in Rhode Island's first game of their history. Sold out stadium. They had the 5,000 crazy fans going for them, and they had to go play Charleston Battery, 2023 finalists of the USL, and now they play then 2023 champions of the USL last season, Phoenix Rising. So from Rhode Island, Charleston Battery, and now Phoenix Rising before they return to home. Difficult. So it'll be very interesting if they can get something from Phoenix that they can take with them. In any case, though, 1-1-1, all different wins, draws, and losses for them as they start their season. Indy 11 would split the points with Sacramento Republic FC in a 1-1 draw. It was the home opener for Indy 11 at Michael A. Carroll Stadium, with an attendance of approximately 8,500 in the stands, both goals coming in the first half. No goals for Trevor Amon, instead an own goal for Chapman Page that gave Sacramento the lead in the 31st minute, but only 3 minutes later it's the Sierra Leone striker Williams who turns center back Donovan like an over-easy egg and slots it home with his left. It was a nice play from the forward. I'll be very interested to see if it's one of the goal of the week candidates, and he scored right in front of those Indy 11 ultras. So hey, way to make a nice reaction right off the own goal from one of your teammates and a score in front of your nice fans. 1-1 for that one. Also 1-1 between North Carolina FC hosting Tampa Bay Rowdies. An own goal in this one as well from Maldonado in the 63rd minute that gave Tampa the lead. And then about 12 minutes later in the 75th, we'd have Metzingen for North Carolina FC getting the goal there. John Bradford, the coach for North Carolina FC, strikes me as a guy who likes to make changes. No Conway starting in this one, neither Brewer or Paleo from the loss against Loudoun. It didn't hurt, I guess, because they got a draw from this one. But 2 points for each of these teams, but NCFC with 3 games played and Tampa Bay with only 2 games played so far this season. Then probably one of the biggest games on the low end of things for match day 3, Las Vegas Lights hosting El Paso Locomotive. A huge bout for both sides. It just needed a winner take all, and it was an own goal by Garcia, the goalkeeper, that separated the two sides in the 33rd minute. Hit off the post and then hit the goalkeeper's back foot to go into the net off a corner kick for Las Vegas Lights. So Las Vegas Lights would win this one 1-0, getting their first win of the season. El Paso Locomotive, 4 games, by the way, most games played so far this season, only 1 point to show for it. They are in trouble. I talked about patterns at the beginning of the show as they start to emerge, and it's not looking good right now for El Paso Locomotive. And next up, you want to talk about when you hit rock bottom, you need some sort of opportunity, something to turn around. They'll have that opportunity come Saturday, April 6th, when they take on the road for the first edition of the Derby del Camino Real in 2024 against their rivals, New Mexico United. Huge opportunity to get New Mexico United side off of a difficult road schedule, right? Talked about it just recently. Rhode Island, Charleston, they'll play Phoenix, and then we'll have to host El Paso in the Derby match. If El Paso can get 3 points from this one, then you have a chance to really disregard the opening, the horrible opening that you've had so far this season, and get your fans to rally around you and give them a reason for supporting you. Because if you walk out of there with nothing but 3 points, albeit maybe a draw, but still, it's going to be tough going forward. And morale is going to be low. But hey, man, you have two weeks to recuperate, and you'll face, we can say a wounded New Mexico side from all this travel and tough schedule, right? So very interested to see how that one pans out, but we'll still have to wait 2 weeks for that one. San Antonio FC taking on Colorado Switchbacks FC. Well, San Antonio will win this one 2-0 as well. Another team in trouble is the Switchbacks. San Antonio finally gets their 3 points after averaging two goals in each game, but the last two being two draws. In the 35th minute, Herrera had made a huge save against Juan Aguadela's penalty kick for Colorado. And then in the 44th minute, San Antonio almost got their first goal of the game after the fact that Aguadela missed his penalty kick, but it was cleared off the line. Same to start in the second half, but it was Colorado hitting the post after a dangerous ball was played in the box by Tejada. Then in the 75th minute, Silva breaks the deadlock for San Antonio FC, followed by another in the 90th minute plus, with Aguadela setting up substitute Hugo Mbungwe to seal the deal. Excuse me. Hey, three games and three losses for Colorado. Next up is Sacramento Republic for them. Well, we'll see if they're worse off than El Paso. El Paso only got 1 point from their opening four games. Colorado, let's see what they do in their next game coming up, which will be their fourth against Sacramento. Orange County Soccer Club taking on Miami FC. Talked about 2-2 draws for San Antonio. Well, it was a 2-2 draw here for Orange County and Miami. Goals coming from Miles in the 33rd for Orange County, as well as Among in the 70th. Miami FC would get the double with Gavilanes in the 12th minute, as well as the 45th minute plus stoppage time. So it was a nice comeback, we can say, from Orange County. The fact that they were down in both situations and still managed to make it a 2-2 draw. I love 2-2 games because there's so much that can go in terms of the storyline, the momentum shifting, and so forth. In this one, Miami always held the lead, but Orange County was right there to tie things up. 15 shots compared to Miami's 5 shots on this one. 56% of the possession going to Orange County. Orange County also had about, 22 touches in the opposition box compared to 7 of Miami. Miami with 4 yellow cards in this one compared to the 1 yellow card of Orange County. Hey, Orange County Soccer Club sitting joint top of the Western Conference with SAFC and Sacramento Republic FC, while Miami is mid-table of the East, tied with Indy 11 and Loudoun United on points. So they split the points between the two of them there. Phoenix Rising taking on Oakland Roots Soccer Club. Phoenix Rising getting their first 3 points of the season in the 1-0 win. I mentioned it last week. Should we be worried about them rising or falling, right? A little bit and so forth. Well, it took care of business here. Thomas Bonvehi of Northeast Valley News recapped the game, saying, going into Saturday night's fray, Rising had failed to score a goal in either of their first two matches, losing 1-0 to Birmingham Legion on March 8th and falling to Monterey Bay by the same score on March 16th. So Phoenix had made chance after chance, and early in the second half, it was Juan Ozakar crossing the ball into the box to Panos Armenikas, who slotted it into the back of the net for his and the team's first goal of the season. Armenikas, who scored the only goal of the game, was pleased by the team effort and the emotion shown by the fans. He said, as in quote, after the game, "I think for us, it's all about mentality. We know we had the players to do it. If we can be aggressive defensively, we all have the quality on the ball. But I think for us, it starts defensively as a team. When we're aggressive and we set the tempo and we get the fans behind us, especially at home, you feel that and you can feel the momentum." Well, let's see if it's momentum when they host New Mexico United on March 30th at home. Oakland's first loss of the season, on the contrary, but they will take some comfort knowing that their next bout is at home against Las Vegas Lights. So, be interesting to see if they can recuperate and get into it from there. That would be it for match day 3. I know I'm missing a game here. I'm recording on a Sunday in Central European time, so I'll have to cover Monterey Bay taking on Rhode Island FC on the next episode. But looking at the table, it's for the Eastern Conference, two games, two wins for Louisville City FC, Detroit City FC, and Hartford Athletic as well. So those are the three teams that are joint top of the Eastern Conference. Notably for Hartford, by the way, the only team to have yet to concede. Goal difference plus two. So they only scored two goals, but they haven't conceded any, while the rest of the teams in the USL Championship have had their goal scored on. On the Western Conference side of things, you'd have Orange County Soccer Club sitting at the top after three games played. In addition to them, it's the same situation with Sacramento Republic FC and San Antonio FC, all tied on points, one win and two draws to show for it. Sitting at the bottom of the table, you have Colorado Switchbacks FC, three games played, no points. Right above them is El Paso Locomotive in 11th, with only one point to show for their four games played. Reminder, they've played the most games so far out of any team in the USL Championship. And sitting at the bottom of the Eastern Conference is Pittsburgh Riverhounds, three games in and three losses, with only one scored and six conceded. They'll play next soon against Tampa Bay Rowdies. That's really it. I mean, elsewhere, you have Charleston Battery in fourth place, right behind Louisville, Detroit, and Hartford on the eastern side of things. And mid-table for Western, you'll have you have the Oakland Roots with one win, one draw, one loss. And we'll see how Monterey Bay does when they take on Rhode Island coming up. And let's preview then match day 4 next week. Starting first, by the way, we have a Friday game at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 Pacific. It'll be North Carolina hosting Hartford Athletic. Then the rest of the games will take place Saturday. Albeit, reminder, next week is Easter Sunday, but Saturday we'll have a lot of USL action. Starting first with Louisville City FC hosting Birmingham Legion FC at 3 p.m. Eastern, 12 Pacific. Indy 11 will host Detroit City FC at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 Pacific. Miami FC hosting Charleston Battery, 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 Pacific. Tampa Bay Rowdies taking on Rhode Island at 6:30 p.m. Eastern, 3:30 p.m. Pacific. San Antonio FC taking on Monterey Bay, 7:30 Eastern, 4:30 Pacific. Orange County Soccer Club hosting FC Tulsa as they get back into action at 9 p.m. Eastern and 6 p.m. Pacific. Oakland Roots Soccer Club will host Las Vegas Lights. That at the same time, that 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. And then we'll have at 9 p.m. Eastern as well, Sacramento Republic FC taking on Memphis 901 FC. So three games in that 9 o'clock Eastern hour for those six teams just mentioned. And then finally, we'll have Phoenix Rising taking on New Mexico United, that at 9:30 p.m. Eastern, 6:30 p.m. Pacific. Hey, I know that I've been covering a lot of Eastern Conference teams for the match day spotlights. Don't worry, every team will get their moment to shine, and we will cover the Western Conference soon. I'm still deciding for next week, but I know on April 6th, we know what game will be in the spotlight, and that's probably going to be Louisville taking on Indy 11. on CBS National Broadcasting Channel. That's right, USL Championship going national. Don't forget April 6th, Louisville and the 11th. So that game will definitely be the match day spotlight for April 6th. But we still have a game week to get to before we get there. Be interesting to see what pops up. In the meantime, prior going into the next week, just a reminder, as always, I welcome feedback. Please let me know your thoughts on how the show is going and the structure. What are you enjoying, like to see more of? I'm curious to get your listening habits, right? Are you listening on the way to work? Are you listening while you're cooking? If you just go for a walk outside with your dog? I don't know. Are you listening? I'm curious. Maybe it's on the way to USL games. I know we record and get these episodes out every Monday. But yeah. Let me know. Write me an email at talkuslchampionship@gmail.com. talkuslchampionship@gmail.com. Not much news elsewhere to get into. Really just sticking with what's going on in the pitch. But it was really an eventful match day 3. The patterns are starting to emerge, like I said. And we'll be very, very keen to see how they keep on emerging as we go on to this journey together. Thank you. Thank you for listening. Talk USL is everywhere podcasts are available and can be found on all social media platforms with the handle @TalkUSL. And if you want to support the podcast, please make sure to give a review on whatever platform you're using to listen. Make sure to tell your fellow friends, your family, and most importantly, fellow USL fans to give a listen. I'd really, really appreciate it. This has been All Talk, All USL. Talk USL, covering the latest scores, news, and developments in the USL Championship. Talk soon, everybody. Bye for now.